Back in 1996, in Ann Landers' column, someone wrote, said, "Dear Ann Landers, I've never seen this subject addressed in your column before. Mm-hmm. Been bothering me. Co-worker died recently. All of us at the office attended the funeral mass. Several non-Catholics stepped forward to receive communion during the mass. Ann Landers, receiving communion is a sacrament in the Catholic Church for baptized Catholics only. Apparently, most non-Catholics don't realize it." This person signed it, "Bothered in Boston." "So, dear Boston, I asked a Jesuit friend, expert in canon law, to respond to your letter. Here's the response, the Reverend J. Gessinger, J. period, or S. period, J. period. I don't know what that is.
Senior Jesuit.
Senior Jesuit, there you go.
He's almost a bishop.
So he said, "Non-Catholics should not step up to receive communion, although the church allows exceptions under certain specific circumstances. Sometimes non-Catholics are present at church ceremonies and are unaware that it's inappropriate for them to receive communion. Would it be best at those times not to make an issue of it and to inform the person of the situation at a more private moment?" So that's the way Ann Landers answered it. So remember that, because I've never seen that addressed too much. I'm not going to read all these things. These were from November of 1996. "Dear Ann Landers, I was raised to respect all religions. The Catholics I've known since childhood always gave the impression that they believe theirs is the only true faith. Now the issue of communion comes up in your column. It's more of the same holier-than-thou attitude. You quoted Reverend Robert J. Gessinger, said non-Catholics should not step up to receive communion, although the church allows exceptions. More Catholic snobbishness. Says, I'm Lutheran. All Catholics are welcome to take communion in our place. Please tell those who are rejected to come to us." That was from Madison, Wisconsin. So Ann Landers said, "Well, dear Madison, thanks for the open invitation. I'm passing it along, but meanwhile..." Ann Landers, "Please remember that religions were never intended to be all-inclusive. Why shouldn't the Catholic Church have rituals for Catholics only? It's not snobbery. It's rooted in their religious beliefs. Someone who does not believe in Catholic doctrine should not be participating in Catholic rituals. I received a surprising amount of mail on this subject." More on the subject from Tempe, Arizona. "Please let your readers know that most, if not all, mainline Protestant churches serve communion, and many have open communion where any Christian is welcome to participate." The phrase that you may have not heard, that open communion, many times you'll see in the newspaper, especially during Easter holidays, you'll see sometime maybe on a Thursday or a Friday, a particular religious group will say, "We have open communion," but at a later time, "closed communion." Closed communion means that it's only for those in that religious congregation or that place that are in good standing with the leadership of that congregation. Then they bring those people in, they take the communion and close the doors. That's what I mean by closed communion. Open communion is kind of what we practice. The communion goes up and down every pew. But as Orby says, really, and I'll get to this in future lessons, it's for Christians. You know, we have the obligation to partake. So another one said from Portland, Oregon, "You really stuck your neck out when you opened your column up for comments about communion in the Catholic Church. I was raised Catholic, but haven't been inside a church for 20 years. I discovered long ago that religion is so filled with hypocrisy, I don't want any part of it. I do believe in God, but I don't have to go to church to prove it." Really? "I honor my God by doing everything I can for fellow man." So that person, as Romans chapter 10 says, has established a religion of their own, a righteousness of their own. and not according to God's righteousness. Another time, thanks for opening the volley. I haven't received so much combustible high-octane mail since I started that national flap on how to hang toilet paper.
Oh, that was funny.
That was a good one. That lasted a long time.
That was funny.
So this person from Maryland says, Dear Ann Landers, the policy of the Catholic Church to withhold communion from non-Catholics runs counter to Jesus' instructions. Jesus excluded no one, not even the outcasts of society, such as tax collectors, prostitutes, and adulteresses. For those who want proof, tell them it's all spelled out in the scriptures. Really? let's see, just a part of this one. I was amazed to read in your column that some non-Catholics think it's snobberish or holier-than-thou attitude that causes them to be excluded and not asked to step up and partake of the communion Catholic Mass. Please advise them that even Catholics who are not in a state of grace, in parenthesis explains it, those who haven't been to Mass and been absolved of their sins, end quote, are not supposed to take communion. And we'll address that too, because it's a wrong definition or explanation when we partake of it in an unworthy manner. People think, oh, that has to do with your manner of life, and that's a wrong conclusion. So we'll address that in a future lesson next week, Lord willing. So he says, I suggest that people who don't like the rules of the Catholic Church go somewhere else. Let me see. There's one from Texas. Darren Landers, who do you think you are? Stirring up trouble in your column, getting people to argue about religion. I'm canceling my subscription to the paper. This one says from Van Nuys, your Catholic authority, writing to Ann Landers again, your Catholic, quote, authority, needs to read up on his doctrine. The bread and wine are not symbols. At the Last Supper, Jesus said, this is my body and this is my blood, and that's exactly what he meant. I'll answer that one too next Sunday evening. Lord willing. Oh, well. Of course, I believe Catholicism is the only true religion. I would not attend Mass every Sunday and sacrifice to send my children to Catholic school if I didn't believe in it with all my heart. To welcome non-believers to join us would be blasphemous. This is the way it's been for 2,000 years. Anyone who wishes to receive communion in the Catholic Church is welcome, but they first must join us. All right. So let me explain some things about the Lord's Supper. Had it start when Jesus and the apostles were going to assemble together right before his crucifixion to observe the Passover. Jesus sent his disciples ahead to observe that and make preparations for that Passover meal. The Passover meal goes back to the exodus of the Israelites who were held in bondage in Egypt. Pharaoh would not let them go. So God sends plagues to convince Pharaoh to let the people go. First plague was water turned into blood, Exodus 7, verse 17. The second plague in Exodus 8, verse 5, were the plague of the frogs coming out into the land. And just by the way, in Exodus 8, verse 9, Pharaoh comes to Moses and pleads with him to take the frogs away. And Moses asks him, when do you want me to take the frogs away? Pharaoh says, tomorrow. I don't know why. These were not pets. They were not cuddly. They were a plague of frogs. But Pharaoh said, when do you want me to take them away? Moses said, when do you want me to take them away? He said, tomorrow. One more night with the frogs. I don't get that. But that's what he wanted to do. The third plague was the lice. Exodus 8:16. Exodus 8:24, the swarm of flies. Exodus 9:3, murrain of the cattle. Exodus 9:9, boils and blains upon man and beast. In Exodus 9:18, hail. Exodus 10, verse 4, locust. Exodus 10:22, darkness for 3 days. And then it was told in Exodus 11, verse 4, that all the firstborn in the land of Egypt would die. Now it's interesting, this 10th plague, it gives us the origin of the Passover. In Exodus 12, in verse 12, when I see the blood, and I'll give you more information on this in a moment, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you. This day shall be for you a memorial. Now God instructs Israel, the Israelites, before this 10th plague takes place, to observe this meal, this Passover meal. Here's the story. I'm just going to read to you for a moment. Exodus chapter 12, beginning of verse 1. Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, by the way, I'm using the same Bible you have in the pews. It's the New King James Version. So this month shall be your beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, every man shall take for himself a lamb, according to the house of his father, a lamb for a household. So one lamb per household. If a household is too small for a lamb, let him and his neighbor next to his house take it according to the number of persons. According to each man's need, you shall make your count for the lamb. So if your household was too small, you would invite your neighbors over, and typically a household would be 10. If you had less than 10, you would invite someone over, and the reason why, because the whole lamb had to be eaten. That meal had to be complete. Verse 5, your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. May take it from the sheep or from the goats. Now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month. So you choose a lamb on the 10th day. You keep it for 4 days. Becomes your project for 4 days. That one-year-old lamb without blemish. Then the whole of the assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at midnight. You shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the houses where they eat it. So when that lamb is killed and you take the blood, you're going to roast the lamb. We'll read that in a moment. But the blood of the lamb goes on your doorposts, so that we'll read it, when the Lord will pass over those houses where there's blood on the doorposts and the lintels. You get that word Passover. Verse 8, they shall eat the flesh on that night, roasted in fire, with unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. So the Passover meal really had four items on its table. It had the roasted lamb, had unleavened bread, bitter herbs, and then a beverage that we read about in Mark chapter 14, the cup. Jesus takes two of those things from the Passover meal and institutes his own supper. From those four items, Jesus takes two. Verse 9, do not eat it raw nor boiled at all with water, but roasted in fire, its head with its leg and its entrails. You shall let none of it remain until morning. What remains of it until morning you shall burn with fire. And thus you shall eat it, with a belt on your waist, your sandals on your feet, your staff in your hand. So you shall eat it in haste. It's the Lord's Passover. So on this first event, they were to eat it in haste, because when that 10th plague came, they were to make their exodus out of Egypt and head toward the promised land. Verse 12, for I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and will strike all the firstborn of the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. By the way, sometimes preachers or Bible class teachers will use the phrase, oh, the death angel. That's not the phrase. It says, the Lord, I will pass over you. So if you hear the word death angel, just kind of make a note, oh, that person doesn't know what they're talking about. Verse 13. Now the blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. And the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. So this day shall be to you a memorial. You shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance. So that just interesting, just those two words again. As we mentioned that in our Bible class on Wednesday night. Sometimes the words everlasting and throughout your generations is used interchangeably in that verse right there concerning the Passover. The story picks up in verse 21. Well, there's more to it, but I'm going to skip part of it and go right to verse 21. So then Moses called for all the elders of Israel, said to them, pick out and take lambs for yourself according to your families. Kill the Passover lamb. Take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that's in the basin. Strike the lintel of the two doorposts with the blood that's in the basin. None of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning. For the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door, not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to strike you. You shall observe this thing as an ordinance for you and for your sons forever. It will come to pass when you come to the land which the Lord will give you, just as he promised, that you shall keep this service. And it shall be, when your children say to you, what do you mean by this service? That you shall say, it is the Passover sacrifice of the Lord, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he struck the Egyptians and delivered our households. So the people bowed their heads and worshipped. Then the children of Israel went away and did so, just as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron, so they did. Came to pass, verse 29, came to pass at midnight, the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of livestock. So Pharaoh rose in the night, he, all his servants, all the Egyptians. There was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. Then he called for Moses and Aaron by night. He said, rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said. Also take your flocks, your herds, as you have said, and be gone, and bless me. Also, wow. So there's the situation of the Passover. When they left, and by the way, I have a couple of. I don't remember who. I thought Pam may have given me this one. I just happened to date it back in 2002. I'm not sure, but then I saw it in the Heart to Heart magazine this past month, and it's an article that just talks about leaving Egypt. It says what Moses did is overwhelming when you think about it. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. Moses and the people were in the desert, but what was he going to do with them? They had to be fed. Feeding 2 to 3 million people requires a lot of food. According to the quartermaster general in the army, it's reported that Moses would have needed 1,500 tons of food each day. Do you know that to bring that much food each day would require 2 freight trains, each at least a mile long? Remember, too, they were out in the desert, so they needed firewood to use cooking the food. That would take 4,000 tons of wood and a few more freight trains, each a mile long, just for one day. Now we're talking about the Exodus. And just think, they were 40 years in transit. They needed that in just one day. Oh, yes, they would have needed water. If they only had enough to drink and wash a few dishes, it would take 11 million gallons each day. and a freight train with tank cars 1,800 miles long just to bring it. And another thing, they had to cross the Red Sea at night. Now, if they went on a narrow path, double file, the line would be 800 miles long, would require 35 days and nights. So there had to be a space in the Red Sea 3 miles wide so that they could walk 5,000 abreast to get over it in one night. Quartermaster General of the Army figured these things out. Said, but then, another problem. Each time they camped at the end of the day, a campground two-thirds the size of the state of Rhode Island was required, or a total of 750 square miles long. Think of it. You think, in the last paragraph, so you think Moses figured all this out before he left Egypt? No, probably not, he says. Moses believed in God. God took care of these things for him. So now, do you think God has any problems taking care of all your needs? He could take care of 2 million Israelites making an exodus out of Egypt and feeding and guiding them every day for 40 years. Let me just read one because I was going to read all the things, and I'll read these in next lessons. But the story of the Lord's Supper. Here's just one. I'll come back next week. I'll read Mark, Luke, John, and 1 Corinthians. And here's the story from Matthew. Matthew 26, beginning of verse 17. Now on the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which was also the Passover, because it continued for a week. The Passover day was that just the first day, but then it lasted for a week. Well, first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples came to Jesus saying to him, "Where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Passover?" That annual event, remember? He said, "Go into the city to a certain man. Say to him, 'Teacher says, my time is at hand. I will keep the Passover at your house with my disciples.'" Wow. So the disciples did as Jesus had directed them. They prepared the Passover. When evening had come, he sat down with the 12. Now, as they were eating, he said, "Assuredly, I say to you, one of you will betray me." They were exceedingly sorrowful. Each of them began to say to him, "Lord, is it I?" He answered and said, "He who dipped his hand with me in the dish will betray me. Son of Man," imagine Judas having that hand in there, go pull that hand out pretty quick, doesn't he? "Son of Man indeed goes just as it is written of him. But woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man if he had not been born." Then Judas, who was betraying him, answered and said, "Rabbi, is it I?" He said to him, "You've said it." Then at verse 26, so as they were eating, Jesus took bread, blessed, and broke it, gave it to the disciples and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." Then he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them saying, "Drink from it, all of you. For this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for remission of sins." But he hadn't shed his blood yet. That'd be the next day. We'll talk about did this literally become body and blood. Verse 29, "But I say to you, I'll not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." When they'd sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. So we'll talk more about the Lord's Supper and strive to answer your half a dozen or a dozen questions that people have about the Lord's Supper. A lot of, like I said, when we're reading all these articles from the Nan Landers, there's a lot of misconceptions, false information. So we'll strive to look at some of those things in future lessons. And Jesus said in that text, not drink it from this time until I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. It's communion. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the Bible uses the word communion. When we observe the Lord's Supper, it's communion. Communion not only in friendship and fellowship with one another of like precious faith, it's communion with Jesus. Also, when he uses that phrase, I'll not drink it new with you until I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom, that means the kingdom has been established. It was not a future event after the day, in Acts chapter 2 on the day of Pentecost. If we find disciples observing the Lord's Supper, we know that the kingdom is in existence because Jesus said, I'll not drink it new with you until I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. So the kingdom or the church was established. And then the shedding of blood. So for remission of sins, new covenant. So we'll talk about some of these, answer some of these questions that people have in future lessons and try to clarify some of those misconceptions. So that's why at the close of a lesson, you know, let's stand together and sing a song of invitation, a song of exhortation. And we're pleading and praying. And once you've heard that good news gospel message and you believe it, you're willing to turn your life around to God's side. You're willing to confess your faith before witnesses that are gathered here. You can be baptized. Then rise to walk in newness of life. Now you're in the family of God. Forgiven of sins. Hope you have the hope of heaven within. Other blessings on that one action. And then we grow. So that's the invitation. If you're subject to it, if you haven't accomplished that, you want to ask brethren for strength or encouragement, step aside me, and at the end of the song, I'll just ask you.